When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to episode 19 of Matt D'Elia is Confused. My guests this week, because I have two, are filmmakers Troy Duffy and his partner who he worked with sometimes named Sam Macaroni. Troy, I've been aware of forever. Troy directed The Boondock Saints, wrote and directed The Boondock Saints, and his story is crazy. The movie has a massive cult following, and he's made two, and as he talks about on the podcast, he's about to make a third one. But when he made the first one, when it first was getting set up, he was sort of, there's this crazy story that he goes on to tell for us, but the short version is he was plucked out of nobody-dom. He was a bartender. He wrote a script that Harvey Weinstein came across. I know you're not supposed to say that name anymore, but that's what happened. And he was going to finance the Boondock Saints, have Troy direct it, and it was like this big whole thing. There was a whole narrative around it, and he was a shooting star. A documentary was made about that process, him going from bartender to star director. And that process, the documentary is called Overnight. And Overnight tells the story of a movie falling apart. Miramax didn't end up making the movie. All of that fell apart. Troy had this kind of like, I guess, meltdown kind of. It's hard to explain. You should see the documentary, though, if you're interested, because we don't get into the story of the documentary. You can just fucking watch that if you want. We talk about a lot, though, and that is sort of the entry point to our conversation. He's been in the business a long time. He's a director. And Sam, who Troy works with now, is sort of very heavily involved, like, with YouTube and online videos and very modern stuff. And Troy's been doing it forever. Sam's sort of emerged in this much more modern space. And I was interested in having a conversation just generally about the film industry, which is, of course, my industry by trade. And just to sort of talk about what the business was, what it is now, and sort of everything in between, while using Troy's story as sort of an entry point into the conversation. We reached out to Troy directly. Troy suggested he come on with Sam. We said, oh, good, let's do it. We actually did this one in person. It was a lot of fun. This is the first guest episode that I've had about movies, so I was excited about it. And like I said, I've just been aware of Troy forever. I remember seeing Boondock Saints for the first time when I was when I was living in New York, like, I don't even know, 17 years ago, maybe. And I saw Overnight, the documentary, around the same time. So there was this kind of like legend-ish thing swirling around Troy Duffy. And he's somebody I really wanted on the show. I'm happy we did this. Thank you so much, Troy. Thank you, Sam. Here is my conversation with Troy and Sam. Enjoy it. Okay. All I am here with Troy Duffy, Sam Macaroni. Thank you guys for coming on Matt D'Elia's Confused.
Hello, Matt D'Elia.
Hello, Matt D'Elia.
Yeah.
Down here.
I reached out, just for some context, I reached out directly to Troy, and you were like, this sounds great. Let's get Sam on here. Let's all come on. Let's have a time. And that's what we're doing. We're having a time right now.
Cool. Talk some movies, man.
Let's do it. So, but first, what I like to do is have my guests give like a little bit of like a, this is who I am, but in their own fucking words. So I don't have to be like, this is Troy Duffy, who's this and this and this. So if you have a way that you would frame yourself, what would that be? For the listeners.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Matt D'Elia is confused.
Exactly.
You're supposed to be doing that.
I know about Troy Duffy.
All right. I'm Troy Duffy. Moved to Hollywood as a young man. Wrote a script called Boondock Saints. Sort of took the town by storm, and I went from bartender to a film writer-director my first time out. There was a lot of... What should we call it? Controversy
is definitely a word that works. Yeah.
In my career, but I got the movie made my way with my cast, and we also did an album. I was in a band. We had that made our way that we wanted to do that first time out. So, yeah, Boondock Saints also spawned a sequel. It's healthy little.
Major cult following, yeah. For sure. I mean, just from my connection to Troy, I mean, I when I was living in New York, I lived with like three heathens. We were like 19, 20, and Boondock Saints was just always on one of the TVs there. So
I can't tell you how many times I've heard that story.
Yeah.
Well, I've lived with heathens too.
Yeah.
Well, like five or six at a time.
Right. I've done that. This was just three other heathens and then me.
A light heathen.
Yeah, light heathening.
A light heathen crowd. And Sam, how about yourself?
My name's Sam Macaroni. I'm a filmmaker. I moved here probably 25 years ago to Los Angeles. Made some features, sold some TV shows, made some viral videos, and currently Troy is my writing partner, and we're writing some cool movies.
Yeah,
now that I think about it, I think me and you were the first two people we met in Hollywood.
I know, you're on that list.
I knew three people when I met Sam. We've been together ever since, basically.
You guys have known each other a long time then.
Yeah, way long time ago.
Man. Way long time.
We've seen each other at our best and at our worst. Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
So how long have you guys actually been working together?
Oh, 5 years.
5 years, yeah, about 5 years now. He came over and said, look, I can't write.
Huh? Yeah, I have no fucking clue.
Sure.
You gotta do this for me.
No.
We did that skit that I sent you.
Yeah.
We were like,
The Knight Rider.
Yeah, Sam made viral videos and stuff for Disney and stuff like that. So we just kind of collaborated on it. It ended up being a hoot. So we, started writing together and doing stuff together.
And Sam, how did you, the viral video thing, you were into that shit kind of from early on, right?
It's kind of interesting. I used to make short films, and when I moved to Los Angeles, I used the short films to get work.
Right.
Sold a TV show to MTV, did a lot of stuff, and then I directed a feature film for National Lampoon in 2005, and they were not the best company to work for.
Sure.
I'll leave it at that.
Heard that.
But
whose mother?
Yeah, I was a first-time...
How dare they not recognize your dad?
I was a first-time director, and I had a lot of people steering me in the wrong direction. Sure. There was like 11 producers on, and they look, kid, yeah. You're going to have to put more fart jokes in, and you're going to have to give my girlfriend a SAG card. She can't act. So the movie came out. I'm not even going to say the name of it, and it was got really bad reviews, but my name was on it as a writer.
Right.
So everyone was like, you made a terrible movie.
You did that.
Yeah, you did that thing. So at the same time, I had some friends that were making videos online, and I was like, shit, I always made shorts before there was a place to put them.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that these guys were able to film what they wanted. There was nobody telling them what to do. So I thought that was really cool. I started doing that, uploading them. A bunch of them went viral, and I just thought it was cool because I had complete control. So if I screwed up, it was my fault. And there's something about that feels good. I have no problem if I screwed up. So yeah.
He's kind of playing down the crazy part because like he would like just show up places where it's like, hey, let's go over and get a drink or something. Mm. He would just show up with the film crew and a bunch of costumes and crazy stuff, and he's just shooting. I came home one day. He was doing it in my backyard. He's like, just put on this wig and say this. And then at my birthday party, remember when you bombed my birthday party?
Yes, I do.
Stupid birthday party up in Griffith Park, and Sam just comes rolling down the hill dressed as one of his characters. He used to take his
– it was a little person.
What was her name?
Kiki. It was a male.
Yeah. And it was like, and then Preston was there from Jackass. All those guys were all involved in it back then too.
Right.
Like, Sam was just always shooting like 24/7. It was crazy.
I remember in 1999, I had this series that I wanted to put, and they were like, "The internet's the future, kid."
Right.
My lawyer was like, "Hey, have you seen this thing? You could put movies on the internet." And I was like, you can't even look at pictures on the internet.
Right, yeah.
They go, loading.
Yeah.
But they bankrolled me to put this series up. And at that time, we would pay 30 cents every time somebody downloaded the movie. And the stupid thing went viral. And my lawyer had to pay like $30,000. And he goes, you're shut off.
You had to pay to upload.
You pay for other people to watch. And I'm like, dude, this is not the future. So I went to go make features and other shit. And then,
fuck the future, bro.
YouTube came along. And I was like, holy crap. Like, so we don't have to pay?
When the fuck did YouTube come along?
It was like 2003 or 2004 or 2005 or 2007, actually. So somewhere in there. First it was just people uploading weird stuff.
But yeah.
Then people realized you could put content up there.
Right.
And that's right around the time I refound it, somewhere around 2011.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I kind of want to talk about because Troy, when you first started with Boondock, that was the industry, as we know, was so fucking different then.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, there was no internet. And it was the kind of thing where they could make there could be like a narrative around you, like, we're gonna pluck this guy and we're gonna make his movie, and yeah, it's like this big whole like PR sort of like framed thing moving forward. Now it's such a fucking free for all, you know. And you mentioned control. The one thing that's different now is sort of that to me. I mean, you talk about like your name's on something. And it seems to the world like you did it.
Yeah.
You know, especially as a writer, you can get so fucked like that. But yeah, as a director, too, they take your shit away all the time, you know? And it's like, that's your thing that you're known for.
Yeah.
And I think one of the cooler things about now, I mean, there's a bunch of other shit that's not as cool, which we can get into, but is that you kind of have this, like, it's straight to the source. Like, you're making the thing. You're putting it out there. It's all yours. Whether people hate it or love it, it's what you meant to give the world.
Yeah, there's something special about that. Another thing that's weird is I look at the shorts I made in 95, and I had this big clunky camera. Like in 1989, my dad's like, they're making video cameras now. And I was like, can we get one? And he's like, no, they're $5,000. And I was the only kid in town that had a camera.
Right.
So I'm the only kid of that generation in my town, because I came from Yosemite, that had movies.
Right.
Now, every fucking kid has a cell phone, and it's 4K, and they have, Premiere. Like, the movies these kids are making now are so awesome that I would never even show my first, because they look like they were made with, like, duct tape.
It's fucked up, yeah.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I mean, you can advance quickly, and you can spot talent quickly now.
For sure. I mean, it's just so flooded now, though. I mean, I feel like when you – what year did you make Boondock?
We made it in 99, came out in 2000.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that was – so when was it? I guess that was before anybody was shooting on digital shit, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we made the deal in 96, and there was a whole bunch of there was a big wake, and we were first with Miramax. The whole thing became like a – Harvey Weinstein, Mike DeLuca, bidding war with Miramax and New Line, and then when we finally got to shoot, that was like 1999.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the controversy of that. What?
Let's dive in.
The hell?
Let's go deep. Barbara Walters, this shit, bro. Come on, Natalia.
I am Barbara Walters. Deep. I get that a lot.
Make me cry. I'm waiting.
I doubt I can do that. Actually, yeah. Because, I mean, I saw fucking both your movie, and when did the doc about that come out? At the same time as Boondock?
The documentary?
Yeah.
That would be, like, I think 2003.
Okay.
Several years later.
So the movie was already out then.
Oh, yeah, it had been for a while.
And it was already, had it already established this cult?
Yeah, virtually instantly. That happened, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, What? Tell us a little bit about the actual what you were doing, how the discovery of the of your project came out. Like there's this whole narrative around it that it was like this bartender. Like there was this big push of the narrative.
Well, some of that's true,
you know?
I mean, I was a bartender. I decided to write a script. I did. I gave it to my friend who was an assistant at New Line. He started handing it around, and I you know, you fully expect that these guys just say do nothing but read scripts all day. It's probably just going to get blended right
for sure.
That gray mass of crap. But the opposite happened. Everybody that read it got turned like that, and all of a sudden there was all the agencies were fighting to sign me. I went with William Morris, and you know, that happened. And yeah, Harvey Weinstein wanted to buy me the bar that I worked at. We were going to buy it together and co-own it. And all
Yeah, forgot about that shit. Yeah. And then, so how did it? Miramax ended up not making it then, right?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's basically, I mean, it was basically just casting differences, you know?
Okay.
And also probably a little bit, some of my attitude, but basically casting differences. When I met Harvey, you know, we decide we're going to go do this together, and he's got his stable of sort of Miramax actors.
Right, yeah.
He wants. And some of them I liked, you know, but I was like, you know, the some of them I didn't, and or at least for this. It's not like I didn't like it. It's like, you want to work with all these people
of course.
In the future, but... You know, ultimately, I need to find the right guys for this. And by that time, I'd found Norm and Sean at that time. And Harvey just kind of refused to make it with them and wanted to use his stable of actors. And essentially, we just kind of came to blows about it, and he put me in turnaround.
What the fuck was that like, being a first-time filmmaker, raring to go, knowing the movie you want to make, and Harvey Weinstein, of all people, is like, No, fuck no, we're not doing it that way.
Well, you know, I can kind of see, you know, the Miramax side of this. Here's this new kid that's never done anything telling us how, you know, he wants it. So, yeah, I was a little bit, I didn't know about anything about the etiquette of the industry then. I just thought these people were trying to help me.
Sure.
Here's what I want.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, I didn't really know too much. I was pretty naive and young in terms of the etiquette of the business. I probably should not have kind of played it the way I did. But ultimately, I just wanted my guys. Once I found Norm and Sean, that was it for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, they just kept throwing other people at me.
Who were they trying to get you to put on that?
It's probably a bad etiquette. So yeah, I've learned my lessons. Bad etiquette
it's
to say.
Bad etiquette. Don't you know, say. They were all fantastic actors.
But I all do have them, like, yeah. Like there was this one time we were at an agency, very big agency, called CAA.
Familiar.
And I went in there with my producers, and they pitched two movie stars to me. They were like, what about these two guys? Mm-hmm. How about them for the brothers? And I was just kind of blown away. But right. I give my little speech. Look, I think this is a smaller movie.
Yeah.
And I don't want, you know, kind of movie star baggage people going in here. I want to tell this story, and I think that it needs some new faces. And at the time, they had this actor, Heath Ledger, that I also liked. And so we were also I asked them, you know, is there anybody that could play his brother that you got who's an up-and-comer? So they give me this the two movie stars thing, and I start telling them what I just said, and all of a sudden my producers yank me out into the hall, and they're like, they both go, those guys have read the script, they want to do it. And I'm like, that's not what they said.
Right.
That's not how they say it. We've been in the business. Okay, listen to us, you idiot. So I'm like, all right, let's go back in. So I go back in and basically reaffirm, you know, what I
– Right.
And I have never been invited back to CAA, which is the moral of that story.
Yeah. I mean, fucking A. I mean, how old were you when all that shit was going on?
23, 24.
Oh, you were that young.
Yeah.
Holy shit, dude.
Yeah.
That's crazy young. I didn't realize you were that young.
I was a youngster back then. Yeah.
I don't, yeah.
When the process started.
Right.
Actually, hold on. I was born in 71. I was 25. I was 25 years old.
Okay. So then you end up making the movie with who was it independently financed? Like after that fell apart with them, Miramax.
Well, when it fell apart with Miramax, interesting story.
I want it.
All right. There's an unsung hero here, a guy named Arnold Rifkin. He was the president of William Morris at the time. If you're listening, Arnie, I owe you one, buddy. But he, when we kind of came to blows with Miramax, and he put a Carvey put us in what's called turnaround, and that means whatever money they've spent on the film up to now, they try to recoup some of it, and but another company can go make the movie, but you have to pay Miramax, you know, a portion of what they're in, and they had paid me for the script, they had paid the producers, we had done like one or two location scouts, so they were around say $1 million in, but in a turnaround situation, you know, best you can hope for is like 50%.
Right.
Usually falls around 25 or 30%. But Harvey was charging 100% in this turnaround situation. And it was felt that William Morris and by me that he just didn't want this movie getting made
right
now. So Rifkin just went to a staff meeting one day and was like, they don't treat our fucking clients like this. You know, everybody's on red alert until this thing gets done.
Damn.
So we actually, he and all of his guys, another awesome dude named Cassian Elwes.
Oh, yeah,
so
I know Cassian.
I think
yeah.
he's still president of the indie division over there.
No, he's a producer yeah. now and a darn good one.
Yeah.
And his brother starred in Princess Bride.
Cassian Elwes.
His brother sure fucking did, yeah. Good family there.
Yeah.
Also starred in Liar Liar.
Yeah.
The Claw.
Yeah, and he's on Stranger Things, but.
He is?
Yeah.
Fuck.
He played the mayor. Or something.
Oh, that's right.
That guy's not going
God,
away.
He's good. That guy's good. But Cassian helped out too. We got the whole thing. We found some company that wanted to take one away from Harvey Weinstein, basically.
Right,
to
right,
pay
right.
the 100%.
I'm sure there are plenty of those trying to take shit away from Harvey to show him.
Yeah, what's up. Yeah. But it's nice to find one that can put their money.
Not putting up $1 million, yeah. but yeah. I mean, if you yeah. I mean, I feel like that. Okay, so then you're fucking making the movie, and it mm-hmm. comes out, and it's finally. Quickly a success, and it finds that cult following, which mm-hmm. is like the area I feel like as a director,
yeah,
that's your ideal. Like, you want the cult following for your movie.
It's the coolest word in film,
yeah, right?
Cult,
yeah,
yeah. yeah. Cult hits are ones that even the industry never really saw coming,
right?
The people did, you know. It's almost like they did this thing the other day I saw on the highest grossing film of all time, and it's actually what's one with the toast and shit.
The Toast movie?
Yeah, they throw toast at the screen. I always forget the name of it.
Toast? I don't know.
That huge cult thing. Biggest cult film ever made.
I don't know.
They throw toast at the screen.
They throw toast at the screen.
Bryce, look up anybody? Toast at the screen.
Chris got it.
Chris He's coming. Got it.
There's a Chris. Rocky Horror Picture Show. Is, yeah. That's the highest grossing film of all time because it's been playing... Yeah. Constantly.
Still doing theaters and shit, yeah.
Yeah, like outdid Avatar or whatever, but it's like this sleeper thing that nobody knows about.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, cult films are, man, if by the way, all right, now that we're actually on this subject,
yeah.
One of the best cult films that very few in the U.S. have seen or aware of is this film called Nil by Mouth. You ever seen it?
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
you
yeah,
seen that?
Yeah,
yeah, I would expect. See, cinephile over here.
Trying, yeah.
Matt D'Elia is not confused.
Not confused no, about that.
Understand. I saw that in the weirdest way. One of my friends from the U.K. was like, you got to watch this.
Right.
It's one of the best movies ever made. So I was just riveted the whole time. And I'm like, well, who the hell wrote
yeah.
this and directed it? And it says Gary Oldman. Jeez. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, well, it's just got to be another guy
right.
named Gary Oldman. But it was the Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
And at that point, you just get pissed off.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
all right, this guy's talented like everywhere now.
Yeah. yeah
it's one of the upsetting. Best actors and directors and writers. Holy shit.
Yeah.
But it was riveting. Highly recommended.
No by mouth.
To your listeners.
Yeah. So, Colt, I just as a director myself, what is that experience of having the fucking that? What is it when you're like, oh, this is actually like a cult thing now? Mm-hmm. Like, how does that, what is that?
Well, my experience, I'm not exactly sure if it was like other people.
Sure.
You know, we had this really bad thing happen. Another, like, there's just been the weird shit around Boondock. Before we had our screenings for the industry, which are basically, you know, you've made your film independently, you go to all the studio lots like Paramount mm-hmm. and Fox and Sony, and you get to screen your film in their theaters, and all their buyers come down and they figure out whether they're going to buy your film and put their engine behind it and stick it out in theaters and stuff. So we were in the middle of those, but it was 2 weeks after the Columbine incident. And our screenings were going awesome, but we were just feeling it in the air.
Right.
You know, we were having 400 or 500 people, nobody leaving. Everybody was just really reacting well to the film. And this buyer came up to us and he's like, you guys did a great job. This is a wonderful movie. It's been blacklisted. So
congrats.
Yeah. Thus began our cult journey, you know?
Right, right.
In the bottom of the beer glass and going, oh, my God, my sensitive, tender film.
Right, yeah.
Oh, we did all this work. But then we made a deal with Blockbuster, which they were doing this thing called Blockbuster Exclusives back then.
To the children, Blockbuster is where we used to get our movies before Netflix. It was a video store.
You could get them on your fucking phone.
You would walk in and there would be actual boxes with pictures, and there was never the one you wanted, so you took another one, but that's gone.
You actually had to go to a place, believe it or not, to get the movie.
And you had to rewind it and bring it back, or you would get charged.
It's called late fees.
There's a thing called rewinding, which you don't have anymore.
Yeah, kids don't even know what rewinding is.
No.
Probably. Yeah, they scrub backwards.
They scrub, yeah.
Pull back.
Please scrub before you return.
Yeah, yeah. So we basically got to deal with this great guy, God rest his soul, Dean. He was the CFO of Blockbuster, and he was like, man, you guys got screwed. This is great. We're going to release it as an exclusive. And they had something like 7,000 stores at that point. And when they had an exclusive, what they would do is release it like it was a big movie. 60 to 120 copies a store rather than your usual, oh, it's an independent film, here's two copies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was walking in, and there's just like whole shelves from top to bottom were all Boondock. And, you know, started seeing them. But like they would call us up and tell us how things were going. They said it was the highest grossing straight-to-video that they had had up to that time. But then my experience became a little bit stranger because – you know, you'd think you'd be making a lot of money in that situation, but there was some lawsuit action well after this, but we weren't making anything. And then I'm going around, I'm seeing kids with the tattoos.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I'm like, we had to have been making some money here.
It's on people's arms for their whole life.
Sue these people. Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, we got the bright idea to start selling T-shirts. And I remember that, like, me and a buddy of mine, we got the URL. This is when the internet was just sort of being birthed.
Sure, yeah.
We bought boondocksaints.com. And, like, the first day, there was, like, 50 to 100,000 just hits on people that were just typing the movie in and adding a dot fucking com.
What?
So we're like, all right, let's put out a T-shirt. We didn't even have a T-shirt. So he created this digital one with a cross and very Veritas. And we sold some ungodly amount the first month. And we're like, we don't even have these goddamn things.
Right.
I had to go like and find some dude that does T-shirts and get it. Like, I was like, can you do 12,000 T-shirts? He's like, what? The fuck? And he calls another guy. Can you handle an order this big? And then, you know, pretty soon we built that business,
right?
Got enough money to start suing people, and we did.
Do you still have boondocksaints.com?
Mm-hmm.
And do you still have merch? Do you still have shirts?
Yeah.
Okay, so
all that stuff.
Well, then go to boondocksaints.com and
get a shirt. Boondocksaints.com.
I have to order another 12,000 shirts after this airs. Okay, so then it comes to time to make a sequel. How long of a break? How long between when Boondock comes out to when you're making the sequel?
10 years. And it's been another 10 years between now and 3, which we can talk about in a bit.
Yeah.
But that was 10 years. And, you know, pretty long time to wait. Some of it was my fault. Writing a sequel was, it's not like writing, you know? Like,
for sure, yeah.
Most people, like a lot of writers, you know, can, that empty page for me is like, you know, I can just run free. But when there's all this other stuff in front of it, you know, it was difficult, you know? And it's been that long again writing the third one. So it's difficult, but, you know, I remember Sam, this one day, hits me up with he goes, I just found the 10 commandments of writing sequels and prequels. So I kind of just stuck to them really hard and got it right, I think.
Fuck yeah. And then when did 2 come out?
2 came out in 2010. So 2000 to 2010.
And so now 3, I don't know how much I can talk about it. I'm going to ask. You tell me to shut the fuck up if you must. Okay?
All right. Go ahead.
So, Boondock Saints.
Shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up. Exactly.
Set himself up for that. Walked right through the door on that.
And moving on. Okay. You're writing 3 together. Is that right?
No, I'm not writing 3.
No. Okay. Well, I'm already off to a great fucking start then. Okay. So, 3 has been... have you been planning on making a third since... like, was this...
Yeah, yeah. Like over the last 10 years, I've probably written 2,000-3,000 pages on this, gone every which way direction. And it was a hard code to crack, but I think I've recently been able to do that. I'm having some fresh eyes look at it right now to see what I got, but I'm pretty confident in it.
So you're getting it going, and three is happening.
Yeah, well, here's the wonderful part about all. There's a lot of what have yous when it comes to three. And I had hoped to be able to give you wonderful, exciting information that I have.
Right.
But right before I walked in, I got a text. So here's the basic floor of it. Norman, Sean, and I obviously wanted to. We love Boondock.
Yeah.
One of us talking to one of them the other day, and he goes, Boondock is like home to us.
Right.
Which is a very heartening thing to hear.
It is.
But it's a tough thing to get rolling. The three of us want to do it. I'm speaking to them and reaching out, and we're all on the same page in terms of our desire to make this movie. But you know, the fan will be like, "When's it coming? When's it coming?" That I can't answer. I can only tell you that all three of us are into it. Into the idea, and I'm spit shining that script.
So okay,
we shall see.
All right, so this is kind of the meat of where I want to talk about. Okay. When you both, I suppose, started out making movies, and we kind of hit on this a little bit, but I want to get back to it. It was a completely different industry than it is now.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about, I'm curious specifically, and then we can open up into a wider conversation, but. This is the same property, Boondock Saints, three times, one in the 90s, one in the aughts, one now.
Mm-hmm.
How fucking different is it trying to get a movie made or similar? Like, is it – because to me, I look at it and I'm just like this – because when I was coming up, even from when I made American Animal almost 10 years ago now, and even
made American Idol?
I'm Simon Cowell. Yeah, no, my first feature is called American Animal.
Like, what?
No, you're talking to this is Simon Cowell.
What the fuck are we in a sweatshop right now for if you made American fucking Idol?
Yeah, yeah. Not American Idol. I did not make American Idol. I don't want to get fucking sued, okay?
Matt D'Elia made American Idol. You heard it here first.
And he is confused.
He is totally fucking confused.
Yeah, then I'm really fucking confused. Get a doctor in here. But yeah, I just feel like, especially from when you're doing that, I'm curious as to the same property, how different it is trying to get a fucking movie made. Because I feel like people that don't make them have no idea what it is to make a movie. They think you write the script, you give it to some actors maybe, and they're like, okay, cool, and then you get it going. I feel like now, just in terms of schedules, like such less amount of time to make a fucking movie than you used to. Obviously less money. Unless you're making a huge movie, then you have more money than God.
Well, here's the first thing, and then I'll let Troy talk. 3 years ago, it was even easier to get a movie made. It is currently getting harder because of Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, who we love. And would love to work for.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are spending an ungodly amount of money.
What a whore.
You know, and just trying to get a celebrity at this point is getting difficult because these guys are outbidding everybody.
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, and they do it a little differently. They'll buy the movie outright and make it, and it only lives on that one platform.
Yeah.
But that platform is a beast because there's 150 million followers on it. Yeah. So you make a movie for Netflix, they don't spend any money on P&A. Their P&A is they put you on their homepage and everyone sees it. So, like, there's a little bit of – it's difficult there, but there's a movie me and Troy just shot that we tried to get – we wrote, like, 3 years ago. It's called Guest House. Mm-hmm. We wrote it with a third partner, Sean Bishop. And, you know, it took 2 years of pitching. We went to 11 companies. There's a lot of, hey, we're going to make this, handshakes. Yeah. And we're like, we made it. You know, so many times, we're going to make it. And then, you know, no paperwork. He introduced me to someone finally.
Scott Clayton.
Scott Clayton. And we had a meeting and he said, we're going to make it. We came home. We're like, is this guy real?
Let's see.
It happened within a year. We just finished shooting it. You know, and you find out that you've got the money and then none of that money unlocks until you get a celebrity involved. So you take it out and you take it out and you take it out. And celebrities get 2 weeks, 3 weeks to read. So there's these months that go by while you're waiting and you're biting your nails. And then we got somebody great that we actually always wanted, Pauly Shore.
He
was amazing.
He's so good.
And he came on, and then there was a whole 4 months of working with him and prepping the script. And, you know, we shot it in under a month. And then there's an entire year of post because you cut it and then you screen it and then you cut it and you screen it. And so the time it took us to write it to today, you know, it's like 3.5-4 years.
Yep.
You finish it, you're like, this is great. Yeah. And then it changes a million more times.
Yep.
And it's a miracle to find somebody to give you money to make one of these things.
I wonder how other people do it. We're veterans in the industry. Right. We virtually know everybody or know the guy that knows
that guy. Yeah.
So it was easier for us to maybe say get to actors or get, get to the financier. Scott Clayton's he's a Rossi. He's our fucking friend.
Hey, mate.
He's financed a bunch of movies, and lo and behold, he wanted to do it. I didn't really think he was going to bite it.
I didn't either.
With you. But like,
but he's not from America, so he's more trustworthy.
Yeah, and it's still tough. Like back in my day, you made the deal, the company put the money in the bank, and you started going.
Yeah.
You know,
studios make 3 movies a year now. Yeah. And, you know, they pick 3, they make them. You're not going to get a studio movie unless you're a franchise or you're a comic book.
Right.
You know, there's only, what, 5 studios left now because Fox, Disney bought Fox. So they have a slate. And, you know, if you don't have Chris Hemsworth or somebody, you're not in their slate. So you make it independent.
Yeah.
And then they look at it and decide if they want to pick it up. But it is difficult.
Yeah.
And then Netflix this year, they have a mandate. They're going to make 90 movies this year. 90 movies.
That's
and
you're almost like, 2 movies a fucking week.
And a studio is going to make maybe 12. Maybe 10, 12 tops 12 a year. Tops, so they are just crushing these people. And that's not Hulu, iTunes, you know.
90?
90.
They're just going to be saying yes because they have to.
Yeah. 90.
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's still fucking impossible.
Oh, yeah. They just did The Rock's movies, $120 million budget. They just did Scorsese's movies, $170 million budget. Like, they're not messing around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have all the fucking money.
They do.
Yeah, give us some. Netflix.
Hey, Netflix.
Give us some money.
We love you.
you hit on something I want to talk about for sure, which is that it's the most crazy-making thing, my experience, and I'm sure your guys too. It's in a room, everybody's down to make your fucking movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I've had people to my face, and I'm sure you guys have too. I can't wait to make your movie. We're making your movie. Okay. We have the money.
Yeah.
Let's make your movie.
Yeah.
I leave the office. I literally can't get them on the phone ever one time. Yeah.
Ghosted in the industry.
You've been ghosted.
It's true, though.
It's happened so many times that now when I leave a room and they say they want to make it, I'm like, these fucking liars. They said they want to make it. I have no reason to think they're liars except past experience.
Yeah. No, you're jaded now. It's really tough, man. And, you know, to pull $2 to $5 million out of somebody's bank account, I mean, that's a big deal. Yeah. So, you know, I don't blame those people. They might get excited.
They
but
like you to walk in with actors now. Director and all that stuff.
Whole different process.
Yeah. It really is. Yeah, it's so much more. It's hyper competitive. It was hyper competitive even though when you were starting out, just in a different way, right?
Yeah, it's always the same but different sort of. It's always meant the whole industry is meant to service the viewer. And for my money, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, they're all doing it the right way.
They are so much.
I mean, who hasn't just Netflixed it for a weekend?
Yeah,
for sure. You know, and you can binge watch TV show now that you like. You don't have to wait the week. So it's definitely, you know, maybe a different time, but the same but different, and probably a little bit better. It just keeps getting, you know, it just keeps getting more and more entertainment. You know, if I'm going to just make that choice, are you going to just go with Disney that does 12 movies, or are you going to go with Netflix that is doing 90?
Yeah.
That's a bigger choice for me. So,
and that's their movies. True. That doesn't even count the amount of television shows or series they're putting out. And a series is a whole different nut because they're making, like, 8 episodes at an hour a piece. That's an 8-hour movie. Because you're essentially going to sit down and watch it at once.
Yeah, yeah.
So it allows for more character development. I mean, it's just an incredible new art form.
You're making like an 8 to 10 hour independent film, basically.
Yeah.
Because somebody's watching it the front to back with binging.
Yeah.
You know, and now you got all like MGM and Paramount. Everybody's doing their own. They're trying to run and catch up with Netflix. They're doing their own streaming media now and trying to service that. So, I mean. Yeah, it's changed, but again, same but different. I mean, maybe in my day, or the back in the day when I made my first deal with Boondock, it was more like that thing where you could write a great script and that would really be all you have to do.
Yeah,
you know, suddenly everybody wants you. There's a bunch of press, and then you can get your movie made.
Yeah.
These days, I just haven't seen that happen in a decade.
You don't even. Read about it. Like, that just doesn't happen, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, back when I did, there was a couple of guys that also did it at the same time. you know?
Right.
Now I haven't heard a story like that in a long, long time.
Yeah, fuck, that's true.
It's
yeah.
changing so fast. I'd be curious. I'd like to listen to this podcast right here in 10 years
right.
and see how we consume right. media yeah. in 10 years because yeah. it's
plugging
changing
it right into
so
our brains.
I'm going to put it on my iPhone. Check podcast in 10 yeah. years. Because, dude, how are we going to watch stuff?
I don't know.
It's growing at a ridiculous rate. It's changing.
It's weird, though. I mean, now it's like what I find with all these streaming platforms, and now you're talking about all these other places trying to get in the game with Netflix and trying to compete. It's like you have to have a subscription to each one
yeah.
as an audience member to watch yeah. it. And it's like you kind of – it's almost like you – there was never a time until now where there could be a thing you wanted to watch where you – it's like you can't fucking – access it.
You can't get it. Remember back in the day when we had these things called television sets? We have to turn the channel.
You used to be there at 8 o'clock on Tuesday or you don't know what's going
on. Right, right, right. Now it's like just behind the wall. You're just like, I know it's there. I know people are talking about it.
Yeah, but even them, like even if you, the show I want is not on Netflix.
Yeah.
So I got to go do this other thing. Now, like with Apple TV, they got all the things you can just subscribe to right there. They're even making that easier.
But there's not even time to watch everything. You can't watch. Like, I know about 5 great shows my friends have told me about. I'm like, nope, I'm on this one right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I still have to live. I still have to eat. I still have to work. So
you do.
Sorry.
You still have to live. So you can't watch a show.
It is overwhelming as a maker of these things. You want to know what's up and what's out there.
Yeah.
And you literally cannot. Like, it's like there's so fucking much shit, and you've heard it's all good, and you just don't know where to go.
You don't know where to go.
Also, you have that paralyzation when you're doing what I'm always on the Apple TV looking at all the icons. Like, these are all the things I can watch.
Yeah.
I sit there for 2 hours. I don't watch anything. Because I'm looking for something to watch.
It's like the opposite. It's like the take on the problem there was. You remember that, like, somebody wrote a song, 300 channels and nothing on or something like that. Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah.
And back then, and when we had all the new cable channels coming out, we're flipping through and not knowing what to do. Now it's that, what you just said.
Yeah.
There's something pretty crazy about what Troy did in getting a cult hit movie in the early 2000s before Twitter, before social media. That was actual word of mouth.
Yes.
Have you seen this? Have you heard of this thing? It's cool. I miss that because you know, now you're scrolling. You're like, oh, my God, if I don't watch this, you know. It's like imagine a time when it was just someone told you something was cool and you went and watched it and it was cool and you told somebody else.
That brings up a good point. What is the version – like what is cool now? Because that's true. I mean, when I remember first hearing about Boondock, there was like this – I don't know if mystique is the right word, but it was like, what is this? You know, it's cool. Like it's an in the know thing kind of, you know what I mean? And it's like, as you're talking about, there's no way to be surprised anymore. Cause you just take out the fucking phone, Google it, read 1,000 things that 1,000 different people said about it.
Yeah.
You can read the whole plot, whatever the fuck, watch interviews with the actors.
Sneak peek.
When we write now, okay, old scripts, you'd spend 30 minutes with your character development, and then you'd have the thing happen, you know, and screenwriters would be like, okay, we can't have we can't allude to this. Let's surprise them. Now, if somebody goes to see your movie, they've watched the fucking trailer.
Yes.
They know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So you got to accelerate your beginning of your script because there's no secrets. It's not like, and then the ghost, blah, blah, blah. It's like they already know, and they've already read. So you got to write a different way. Yeah, because
people out there doing spoilers and shit.
Yeah, we always just say, well, they will have seen the trailer. We're not hiding anything. Let's just put that in the first 10 pages now.
Right. You remember when like they had the trailers that showed you every good moment in the movie, and then you watched you went to the theater and it was just nothing but gray shit between trailer moments?
Totally.
Oh, God, that used to piss me off.
I mean, that was like a full-on complaint of mine. I remember I was like, all the good parts were in the trailer.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that is the whole thing now. It's like you have to like – there's so many screens to get through before someone's watching a movie. I remember one of the best experiences I ever had seeing a movie was my brother – had heard about this movie. I don't remember what year this came out, but he was like, have you heard about this movie, Sexy Beast? I was like,
love it. One of my favorites.
I was like, no, because I hadn't heard about it. It was in theaters. It had just come out. And he was like, my buddy saw it. It's supposed to be really cool. I didn't know anything about it. I couldn't Google it.
Yeah.
And so he takes me and we go. And I'm like, obviously, now it's one of my favorite movies. And that experience is really not – you can get that kind of at a festival, maybe.
Yeah.
But even that, it's like you got the fucking whole catalog and you're reading about the movie.
Yeah, you don't know anything. You're just watching it.
To like, not know anything
crap.
And to see Sexy Beast in a theater, it was like – it's this memory for me of like a bygone era.
Yeah.
Because it's like if I was going to see that shit now, I would have already read something on Twitter about it.
Yeah.
I would have seen at least like
you
a teaser.
You wouldn't have got like, you know, yes, Roundtree. Yes, Grosvenor.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
So you would have seen
awesome.
That.
You would have seen that beforehand.
Yeah.
Also, Ray Winstone's awesome performance.
Yeah.
He was also starred in Nil by Mouth.
He's, yes.
When I watched those two movies, I was just like, all right, this guy is one of my favorite living actors.
That dude's a genius, yeah.
He's so
suggesting
good.
Stuff was like a form of currency. You could be like, hey, dude, have you seen Boondock? And then you seemed cool, you know? Now they're just...
It's almost like you're in a club.
Yeah, like, you took that away from us. I can no longer suggest cool shit because they already know.
Yeah, what is the... Like, how does it... What is a cool thing now? Like, what is a cult thing now? How does that even happen anymore? Is that even possible anymore?
And you can't believe... anything on Twitter because somebody might have been paid to tell you it was cool.
Right, yeah.
They're like, is this?
I don't know, but I hope we're not seeing the death of cult, you know?
I know, that's what I'm worried about. Yeah, like what, how does a new thing come along? And I know how it like, but it seems like there's too much of a machine now where it's like, even if it's cool, the studio buys
it. They won't let you do it that way.
Yeah, and then the PR machine kicks in and it's just like out of your fucking hands.
I remember when I made Boondock, I made that movie my freaking way.
Yeah.
I made a movie I wanted to see. And
it
became cult, I think, in a lot of ways because of that. That small mentality, our little story.
Totally.
You know? And I don't know that even if there was a script that was similarly well received, that they would even allow them to... the filmmakers to make it the right way. I was essentially left alone.
Right, that's incredible.
You know? Which is just a freaking miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
And even back then it was kind of a miracle because I was a first-timer.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if they would let you do that.
Yeah.
But they don't have to because you can take $12,000, buy a decent camera and software, and you can make your own and prove yourself to the studios, which you couldn't do a long time ago.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of crazy. You're not going to get celebrities in it, but you can definitely show people what you can do.
It's true, but there are these micro steps now, which is kind of what you were talking about. Back then, you could write the script, people read it, and they're like, this is the thing, this is the entry, this allows you entry through the gate. Now it's like, you got to make the thing that people can be, it can be short and people can see it, and then they're like, that guy's interesting. Then you take a general, and it's like, what do you got? It's like,
you have to continually provide content.
Yeah, it's like fucking endless.
Yeah.
You can't just do the one thing.
No. What else? What else you got?
They're just going to watch it once for 3 minutes, and then you're done.
You're
dead.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Do you remember how many days you had to shoot Boondock, first one?
32 days, I think we did the first one in.
So I feel like that's even that is fucking incredible because I'm making my second feature in January, actually. And it's like, we're looking at like, I'm going to be like so psyched if I get like 25 days.
Yeah?
And it's like.
Well, it depends on what you got to do. I mean, you know.
For sure. Yeah.
We did guest house. What was that? 20 something days?
I'm not going to say how long it took to shoot, but we did it pretty quick.
Okay. Fine.
Fine. Be coy.
No. I shot it 15 days.
15 days.
15. I was supposed to shoot it in 21.
It was almost all in this because it's called guest house. I mean, you'd expect it's on the same property. It was easier to do that.
Containment.
Is yours like a whole different bunch of
venues? It's more American Animals, literally one location, like you're describing. This one's got more shit going on. Yeah. Some more like stunt stuff and
so like
that.
Set moves.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, it could be a little tight, but you can always get in there with a calculator, man, and get things done. We just watched this movie the other day. I'm completely blown away. Another recommendation to your listeners. Update.
Upgrade.
Whole upgrade.
Yeah.
I totally screwed
Updates that. The sequel.
Updates the sequel. It's called Upgrade. Holy shit. This guy shot it for $3 million, and you can't believe that when you see the movie. And it's fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the one with Logan Marshall Green? Wait, what Upgrade?
The guy, who's the guy that did the Insidious, wrote Insidious,
wrote Insidious. 3?
James, not James Wan.
And he was a writer? No, he's a director.
Chris.
He's hooked.
Who is he? Lee, that sounds right.
Lee Wanell?
Yeah.
Wanell? Yeah.
Oh,
he did that.
He's like a New Zealand freaking, or Australian guy.
He's a Kiwi genius, whoever he is. We had to look him up on the internet and see his interviews,
we
too.
We watched every interview,
I just can't believe what this guy achieved with $3 million. I mean, we did Boondock for 5.4, and back then, that was like a miracle. We came in under budget, you know, because we moved fast. Once I knew I had something,
sure,
it's like, go, 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 because we knew we had a lot to do. But this guy, $3 million in this day and age, doing that,
it
holy shit,
guy
man.
Killed it.
Yeah, and Blumhouse, dude, what's in the water over there?
I don't know.
Man? Holy
they
shit!
They turn the shit out, and they're all hits.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, how's that work? Why are they all hits? That's fucked up.
You know, I think so.
He's smart.
I think it's Jason Blumhouse. I'd like to meet that guy someday. I saw this news thing on him. See the com van?
He's amazing.
This guy took like a panel van, like a Mercedes panel van. Uh-huh. And all these things come down the windows. He's got all these TVs. He has meetings in there because he was like, it takes hours to just drive from Hollywood to Santa Monica in traffic.
Whoa.
And he wasn't getting any work done. Now he can have whole meetings in there with guys on screens. He can watch dailies.
Damn.
So he's never off the grid, right? And I was like, wow, brilliant idea. But I think it's his mentality. What he's doing now is going to stars that and pairing them up with great writers.
Yeah.
And not paying the exorbitant fees and salaries of huge movie stars, but giving them true, honest participation in the film.
Right.
So they end up making more than they would have.
Right.
And they feel a lot better about it because the film's budget is kept to a doable amount.
Yeah.
And it's all put on screen.
Right.
And then when it becomes huge, Blum is a fair dude, and he just says, here's a check for $5 million.
Yeah.
You know, they must be feeling good. And who's the guy? Who's the guy from Key & Peele? Jordan Michael Key.
Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele. Keegan-Michael Key. Jordan Peele, when he did
Get Out.
Yeah. I mean, that was just a brilliant film. He ended up being a brilliant director. Mm-hmm. And who was going to take that chance at that point besides a guy like Blum?
Yeah, true.
Say, hey, I can direct. Well, yeah, you've done a bunch of skits and they're all awesome, but that's comedy and this fucking ain't.
And he definitely let him do what he wanted, too.
Yeah,
exactly.
He killed it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, they let me do what I want on Boondock. That's why it turned out the way it did.
Right.
And Blum might be one of those old school guys that's doing that, man.
Yeah.
And really killing it. Also, he has an incredible freaking taste.
Yeah, right.
To even have seen that.
Yeah, you know? For sure. I mean, the movie star thing you mentioned with Boondock, with Norm and Sean, they weren't stars at the time. And I feel like now there's almost this archaic idea that, like, the movie star is the draw now, and that still remains. And I find that to be utter bullshit, actually, because like now no one gives a fuck if Hugh Jackman's in your movie unless he's playing fucking Wolverine or some shit. Yeah. Like they don't always need a fucking star in the movie because they know the movie's the thing people want to come see.
It's good stories.
Which is better now. That's one thing that's better now.
It is, but it also gives birth to that weird thing. Have you ever been like trolling around on Netflix and you find a movie with three huge movie stars in it that you've never heard of?
All the time.
I'm like, that's happening now. Yeah. Holy shit.
All the time.
I mean, what are these just like projects that the studio did and it turned out really shitty? So they put them on Netflix or something?
I don't know.
I'm like, I'm looking at this cast. I'm going, holy shit. Like, just 5-10 years ago,
I know.
That would have been the most blockbuster thing ever. But now here we are in this time, you know, and you're seeing gigantic stars in these movies that almost appear B-movies when you
totally.
See them on the internet.
Yeah.
And you're asking yourself, why the fuck haven't I heard about this? Except for the younger generation that they're like, who the hell are those guys?
Who is that guy? Yeah. I mean, there are actually so many of those. I mean, Nicolas Cage alone has like 25 on Netflix where I'm like, what?
Yeah.
The fuck is this movie?
Yeah, I actually got a movie deal with the guys that made all those.
Great.
Yeah.
It'll get made.
Yeah, yeah. It'll get made. It'll
definitely fucking get made. I mean, I love Cage. And when he's in something that I want to watch, I love it. But there's all these movies where he's like, he'll be like on the cover and he's like running.
Yeah.
Ties like that.
There's fire behind him and he's got a gun.
Yeah. And the title's like running.
Yeah.
You're just like, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
John Cusack has a lot of those too.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, who's paying for these?
Yeah.
And why? Why, if they're not going to have if there's no plan, if they're just like, we made this $30 million movie and now it's just, what are we going to do with it? Just put it on fucking net. Like, what? I don't even know what's happening. That shit boggles my mind, actually.
Yeah, I know. Who's paying for them? Who's the end user? I actually had the experience with a company that does a lot of those types of movies, and they have a business plan that's pretty damn smart. You know, they'll pay like a – this is like almost an explanation of why you see Bruce Willis suddenly in a very – what looks like a very low-budget movie.
Yeah, he's in a lot of those too, Bruce. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll take a big star and pay his full wage for just a couple of days.
Oh.
And once he gets on set, they work him, shoot out everything they need, and maybe this guy's only in 10 or 20 minutes of the movie, but they stick him on the cover,
right?
And they make it look like, you know, the, so it does really well foreign, which
right.
is still a very robust market for American action stars
yes.
and stuff like that. So that's kind of how they're doing it, at least this one company I know. And it's a pretty smart way to go, but it also creates confusion
yeah.
for us.
Yeah, totally.
We're like, fucking, is that Al Pacino?
Right.
When did this movie come out?
Right, yeah, totally.
Speaking of Al Pacino.
I'm always ready to speak about Al Pacino.
The
yeah.
Irishman?
Can't wait to see it.
Oh, my God.
Not wait, man. I read that book years
Dude,
ago.
Dude, I heard you paint houses?
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah, that exactly. fucking that book is insane.
3.5 hours yeah. long.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. I yeah. just hope it's as good as I hope it is.
I mean.
It's going to be. It's Scorsese. Scorsese.
Scorsese. Pacino as Hoffa is, to me, like the most exciting possibility.
Yeah.
In a Scorsese movie is fucking just.
And I don't think Pacino and Scorsese have
no,
worked. Which
no.
is insane because you'd think they would have.
I know, yeah.
yeah.
It's true.
They
yeah.
haven't?
No.
No, dude.
It's insane.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
I saw this thing recently. They were talking about the making of de-aging, and we'll get off this quick because I don't even want to talk about his stuff, but.
Yeah, stay on de-aging.
I want to know about de-aging.
I want to do 5 minutes on de-aging.
There's that. There's you know, a quarter of the movie, these guys are de-aged, you know, like yeah. 30 years back.
Right.
Flashbacks yeah. and now. And Scorsese went into ILM and said, I don't believe you can actually do this.
Yeah.
And they shot a scene from, it was Goodfellas, with De Niro. And they did it in a room, and then they de-aged De Niro enough to convince Scorsese. This is like recently. They brought him in, had him do his lines, and they said, okay, this is what we did. So he was like, okay, I buy it. It'll happen. So they show up to the rehearsals, and De Niro says, okay, I'm not going to wear those little dots on my
face. Right,
right,
right. He's
like, I will act. I will do this. So ILM had to develop an entire camera system. It's one camera in the middle and two infrared cameras on the side. It's this massive beast of a camera system, and they shot the whole movie with these things, and then they can track all his facial moves, all of his wrinkles, everything, and then they can de-age him. But he's yeah. like, I'm not putting those dots on my face.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's a thing we should actually get. But the DGA is like this is the Directors Guild of America is this unbelievable source for seeing the new technology.
Yeah.
You know, me and Sam go down there and watch it. Like, if guys like Favreau and how he did the live
right.
Lion King and all that technology that they have right now. Sam just saw one the other day. I couldn't attend, but he comes back and he's like, you totally missed it. You totally freaking missed it.
Yeah.
And he evidently, they're making these gigantic 8K screens with, say, a cityscape behind you. And they put an actor in front of it. They can use the camera the way they always do. And there's some kind of gimbal system that adjusts the background all the
what?
Way. So they can just like be in a room.
Yeah.
And
there's no green screen.
It,
you
and
just
it looks,
film it.
It looks fucking.
Background's
you can't,
in
you
there.
Can't tell the difference.
Yeah. It's
same shit.
Wild.
So
technology's getting
now we're not
insane.
Even going to have to move locations sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to do that. And Favreau's been working with that technology. And this new shit happening all the time, man. And Sam was into it. He actually had a company that did nothing but VR.
I got obsessed with that for a while.
That's going to be the wave of the future, man.
What is happening? Like, what is next? Like, where are movies going? Like,
yeah.
what the fuck? Are actors even going to be used anymore? Like, what's up?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I don't
we'll
know.
Watch this in 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years. Put it on the yeah.
That's
going to
be
calendar.
A thing. You can just create your own actor.
Yeah, for real.
I got Al Pacino in my movie, my short.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or it's just like, you know, go to the estate of Bob Marley and get him for a movie. Like, you know, like movies will have all the old stars.
Yeah. Yeah. Insane. I mean, you've seen the deepfake shit, right?
Yeah.
Those fake, like, they will place.
That's insane.
That's it's already insane. Too good.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
already too good. And
yeah.
it's like early in its development.
You shouldn't believe nothing you see from this point on.
Well, that's like the literal end of truth, because you can just put anyone on anyone's face.
Yeah.
Give them any voice,
yeah.
and none of us will be able to tell what's real and what's fake.
Yeah, there's going to be some crazy porn stuff happening when that stuff.
Have you guys entered. Seen the fucking like the interactive porn stuff?
I haven't.
Not to be a perv, but I've tested it out.
No.
No, I haven't worn the VR goggles and watched it. But like when you troll on porn sites, you see the 360 one, you can kind of move. Not that I'd know about it.
Of course,
that is just crazy. It's very heard from people.
So I've done the headset thing where like you put it on and then suddenly there's like,
is it like POV? Like you're the guy?
Yes, you're the guy.
Holy shit!
And it's like three women are having sex with you, and it's nauseating because you're nothing's happening in your body, but you're like.
Look at your my brain dick. You got a huge dick.
Your brain is totally, totally tricked. Like, you're not ready for it because your brain's never done it. You know what I mean? So you're just like...
I think in the movie industry, imagine if you can do that. Imagine walking into, you know, the final gunfight at the end of Scarface.
Right.
Imagine being able to walk into that and see it 360 from any point in the room.
Yeah.
Stand on the stairs and just take some of the bullets.
In 10 years, I don't know.
Maybe where it's going.
Nobody's going to leave their house. They're just going to be like,
you're going to hear stories creepy. Of guys with the VR thing that just get robbed. They take it off and everything's gone in their house.
Yeah, for sure. It's on for like 5 days straight. Yeah. They got IVs and everything. Just fucking don't have to move.
When he was doing his thing, they were doing video games. They started out with video games and some of them are just crazy cool, man.
Oh, yeah. You play these horror games and there's zombies running at you and your brain, you know it's not real, but your brain's an idiot. So it's just like, oh, don't shoot people banging into walls and stuff because you think it's real.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that because I feel kind of like a curmudgeon because I'm like, I love the classic movie thing and I'm open to all the new shit. I just don't want like the movie as it is to be gone.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I love movies. I love movies more than anything.
I sit and look at a screen.
Yep.
I love it.
Yep.
I'm down with the other shit too.
Yep.
It just feels different.
You know what? All three of us agree. And why don't you kids get off my goddamn lawn? Close the door. You're letting the heat out.
It's not how we used to do it.
I can tell you when we used to have to go to the movies, watch some shit.
No one's ever going to listen to a movie with sound. In talkies? No. Dead art form.
And then the fucking.
It'll never work.
Did you hear about this Quibi shit
that's
like 11-minute segments of movies now.
I heard about it. I haven't seen any of that stuff. Wasn't that, what's his name?
Katzenberg.
Yeah. Spielberg's doing a big one for them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jeez, I haven't seen
it's
that.
It's like,
the sad thing is I'm sure I'll watch them because those guys are great.
Yeah. Totally addicted.
It's so weird. So weird watching, you know, I'll watch movies in traffic on my phone because we're in LA, so I'm actually not driving them in gridlock.
Do that all the time.
And I'm like, you know, these guys designed this movie to be watched on this massive screen and it's all figured out. And then I'm watching it on a fucking 5-inch postage stamp in my car. But it's still cool and I want to absorb the content. But it's just so weird you couldn't do that in the past.
I know. It is. Here's something I always fucking think about, actually. I guess maybe until VHS was like commonplace, every movie was made to be seen once.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Every fucking movie.
Yeah.
And on a big screen, there was no like small screen even possibility. You know what I mean? And that's like hard for me to wrap my head on because even any movie that I'm considering making now, there's this approach I think that a director has naturally because the world we live in where you're thinking about it being not necessarily like pored over and studied, but like anybody can rewind and watch, look for any fucking flaw, any continuity error, anything minute like that to something big too. Like you can't really hide anything anymore. Cause you watch an old movie, even Hitchcock, it's like there's a little camera bump there. There's like a fucking shadow that would never be in there now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just feel like it's the mindset of a director is actually. Without me even ever realizing it, because I was sort of born into this, because I'm obviously, I don't remember a time where it was like VHS wasn't a possibility. Yeah. But like, there's no. Watching those older movies, I feel like it's kind of cool to think about, fuck, this was like just going to be. The director was planning on the movie being seen one time.
Because it's magic. It's sleight of hand. And you're not supposed to be able to go back and find the tricks.
Yeah.
But even when we write. You have to be so smart right now because a 7-year-old kid understands story more than you'll ever realize. Somebody told me it's like this. In the 1700s or the 1500s, a person would hear a story like once a month around a campfire or a grandpa would be like, let me tell you a story. And then you lived your life. And then, you know, and then short films and radio and you'd see something once every month or maybe once every week. And then radio, you start to hear something every day. Mm-hmm. Now – kids watch, you know, 6 hours of content a day. You're just getting flooded with story points. Yeah. Story points. They're so much smarter. They know. They're like, oh, that guy's the bad guy. I can tell you right now. It's like, you got to hide that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they're just super hyper aware of story detail. And they don't realize they are, but they are.
Yeah, like, it's true.
Got to be clever.
You got to be clever. Yeah, you do. Man.
Too many stories.
Let's trick them these days.
Too many stories. It's kind of fucking true. I don't know what to do because I like a lot of it, and it's great sort of like as a filmmaker, it's good to be in a world where there's a lot of ways to get shit made. Mm-hmm. But like, I do find myself often thinking like there's just too much. So I'm kind of conflicted about it.
Was your father a filmmaker?
Yeah, my dad's a director. Yeah.
What did he do? I remember reading something.
He's a TV director. He did like he was worked with David Kelly a bunch.
Sweet.
He did like Picket Fences.
Wow, that's
fucking
awesome.
Chicago Hope and shit.
Chicago Hope.
He's doing a new show with him for the new Disney Plus the streaming that they're doing.
Wow,
big ass.
I mean, they're up on those sets.
Do that.
Kind of
royalty.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was on set a lot as a kid, and but here's the thing. I don't make TV, and I've never made TV, and I've only done movies, more so independent movies, which is the absolute opposite of a TV set.
100%.
A TV set, everyone's there, they're punching in, they're going to work. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's no like fucking chaos. They're doing 8 pages a day. That's what they did yesterday. That's what they're doing tomorrow.
All
you know
figured
what I
mean? Out.
Yeah. On a movie, it's like insanity because you got to fucking get it. You got to get it all. And you definitely don't have enough money. And that guy's got a fucking lawnmower that's too loud.
Yeah,
and you know
no
what I mean?
Control.
There's no fucking control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But I love that. Love that.
Yeah, no, I thrive on that for sure. Yeah.
Having that kind of pressure situation, having to solve problems like that.
Yeah.
Man, that's half the juice for me.
Yeah.
I loved
it. For sure.
And it was a lot of that on Boondocks.
Was there?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah, man.
How well do you like remember the experience of making the movie?
Oh, very. I mean, it was just a really magical thing.
Yeah.
That set was one of those electric sets. Everybody right down to the PA, from the biggest actor, producer, all the way down to the guy locking off the sets. They all felt it.
And that's
they all
so
gave
cool.
That extra thing, they knew they were working on something that was special.
Right. That's fucking cool. Yeah, I feel like when I think about those high stress moments of when you're in production on something, I remember almost nothing. But the things I remember like they literally happened 5 seconds ago. It's like this weird, almost like it's not traumatic, but it's similar to trauma.
That's
where
true.
It's like you block a lot out almost unintentionally, but the things you remember, it's like you'll
It's because of the time and the situation. When you're actually making a movie, it's not like doing anything else. I think your senses are way sharpened. I think that your heart's in it.
Yeah.
And you're not going to feel all that stuff is going to be imprinted on.
Right.
That's your movie.
True.
Your head, the making of.
Yeah.
I remember almost every minute of it.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, and it's not like that happened. I'm not like a person with a photographic memory.
Yeah.
That time and that experience
ends
up just, I don't know, maybe just kind of getting into a person a little bit more than, you know, say, a cool party or some other memorable thing that you do.
Yeah. Yeah,
you hit it. It's trauma. It's just positive trauma.
Right.
I mean, it's triumph and tragedy like every day on a movie
It's just
set.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Yep.
And then when you get a scene, you know, when you get it and like you cut and everybody starts going,
everyone knows.
Moving on. Yeah,
yeah. It's like after Defoe kissed that guy, Joe Pingay was the actor's name. He kissed Joe Pingay. We had to do a couple of takes of that. It wasn't working out. Joe was kind of cracking under the pressure. He's like,
oh, God.
I'm kissing a dude. I'm kissing a dude. And I was like, just let it happen. It's in God's hands now, bro. We're doing this. Action. And he did it and like Defoe like totally lipped him.
Amazing.
And like, sucked his thing. And then I was like, cut. Boom! Yeah. The whole set. Everybody's like, fuck yeah!
That is definitely a fuck yeah part of the movie, yeah.
Did you use blanks back then, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He actually blew that stuff up and shot that stuff.
Oh, yeah, man. We used blanks on both movies, man. We actually saved up all the shell.
Did you shoot all those blanks in El Duce scene in that neighborhood where he's just...
Oh, yeah. It's all squibs and blanks.
Really? What did the neighbors think?
Oh, that was the coolest. That was like one of the coolest days. You know, we were in this actual neighborhood, and the people that lived in the neighborhood were on both sides of screen almost every shot.
Oh, really?
Kind of frame them out because they got to stand...
So they were stoked about it. They loved it.
Loved it. I mean, I caught Billy Connolly doing a comedy set. I had to grab him. I'm like, you got to shoot your scene now, bro. He's like, hold on. I'm almost done wrapping up.
Sounds about right, yeah.
And, yeah, we just squibbed out the front of that house, and we squibbed out the actors, and we put, you know, blanks in all the guns, and it was just a free-for-all of awesome ballet-like bloodbath shoot-em-up shit that I love.
That's so awesome. Yeah, you get your, like, you know, it's expensive to do that stuff.
Yeah.
So on this movie we just did, you know, I had like an explosion in a backyard. The script had like 10 explosions, the house is on fire.
Right.
And then the day comes and the producers are like, look, you know, it's $4,500 a day to light a fire in the backyard. We got to get permission from all the neighbors.
Right,
you get one explosion.
Signatures and shit.
And stuff. And the fire guy's there.
You
and
feel
he's
like a kid. Can we just sign this,
we
please?
And you go over there, you beg him.
Don't
you know?
Call the cops. Yeah. You hear an explosion, please.
Yeah. It's all money. You know, it's like you get three, or you lose a cop. You lose one cop car if you get your explosion.
Right,
on the day you're just thinking, you're like, I'd rather have the explosion.
Even though that sucks, that's kind of the way
it
is today.
It's awesome.
If you either embrace it or you don't. If you fail to embrace it, your movie's going to suck.
You
gotta just roll with the punches these days, especially in this sort of low budget indie world, you know. So we learned the hard and easy way, I guess. But now there's still opportunities like there never were, and there may be some things that we all don't like to see go away, threatened. But there's still wonderful things you can pull off, man. I mean, Paulie's this dude that is loved by everybody.
I love Paulie. Yeah.
Oh, he's so good.
You know, and he did so well. And the feeling out there on him is, you know, where the fuck has he been?
Yeah.
You know, everybody loves him. I was talking to one of my buddies the other day, who is probably the most conservative person I've ever met in my life. And I mentioned, you know, we just did one with Paulie Shore. He's like, oh, I'd go see anything he's ever in. And I was like, fucking really?
Yeah.
You, really?
Yeah, he's got a lot of goodwill.
Yeah, everybody just loves Paulie, and he just kills it. I mean, I guess we should probably say, if you're expecting to see The Weasel, that's not going to be happening.
He's not doing that.
Paulie Shore, like, you've never seen him that.
He's a heartfelt, hilarious actor. Yeah. I mean, he does
totally
so many
out
levels.
On a limb. He totally went
really
on a limb for us, man. He really killed it.
He plays Randy Cockfield, this belligerent guy that won't leave the guest house. And, you know.
What's the genre? Is a genre?
It's a comedy. It's about a young couple that
Made up a new genre.
Yeah, it's a raunchy rom-com.
Raunchy rom-com.
It's a young couple.
Happening.
They move into their dream house. And, you know, the only stipulation is they got to let the guy that's living in the guest house live there for 3 more months. And the house will be cheaper. He doesn't want to leave.
War of the Roses.
And it goes War of the Roses. There's a turf war. He doesn't want to leave. And the entire, you know,
battle lines are
ruins
drawn.
The family's marriage, ruins the relationship. Everything gets destroyed.
In today's
destroyed.
Parlance from studios, chaos ensues.
Yeah.
Chaos ensues.
It's a balls to the wall, like, you know, R-rated comedy.
And so what's up with it? When did you shoot it? What's up? What are you guys going to do?
Shot it in April. Finished the first cut 2-3 months ago. Screened it a few times. Oh. It went way better than I expected in the screening.
He did that, the screening, he's talking about those tests.
Yeah, we knew it was funny. We thought it was funny. You never know. But to hear the audience going nuts, you know, so I just, we went back in. We just clipped about 6 minutes off of it to move it along a little bit.
Nice.
And it's in final color and final sound. So it'll come out next spring.
That's exciting, dude.
Yeah.
Congrats. Excited. That's really cool.
Got Billy Zane is hilarious.
Dude, hold on.
He's amazing.
Stop right there.
All right. Cold
fucking
the
stop. Fucking stop.
That's right. He said it.
I said this the other day. I said, Billy Zane, A, where the fuck is he? But B, he should be in every.
He's one of the.
He should be in every movie.
Troy and I have a role. He's going to be in every fucking movie we do from now on.
Dude, like, we agree. Everything we're writing now, he seems
respect.
To be perfectly. He seems to be the perfect star.
He's the most gracious, funniest, most hilarious.
We're 37 pages into this new script we're doing. And he's like, who do you think from the lead? I'm like, Zane would be pretty good, huh? He's like, yeah.
Of course.
And then we realized we wrote two other things. Like, we just love him, and he's so fucking good.
He's a pretty good friend of mine.
Everybody.
I tell you, he's a very genuine guy.
Too. At the test screenings, everybody had the same reaction.
Billy Zane. Billy Zane. It's in the note cards.
Everybody loves Billy Zane.
Yeah, we have Steve-O's in it. Amy Teagarden from
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. It's a lot of cool. It's a cool cast. Chris Kattan. Lou Ferrigno. It's like a Comic-Con cast.
Lou Ferrigno.
This is what I'm talking. And Lou Ferrigno Jr., his son.
Lou Ferrigno in his first comic role. And guess what? That motherfucker. It's funny.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is going to be a disaster, bro.
Sounds like a disaster, but I believe
he killed it. I had so much faith in him. I had so much faith in him.
Couldn't believe it.
So good.
I laughed so fucking hard.
Yeah. So
it's also like when you see somebody do something they have never fucking done before, kill it that hard, it becomes twice as funny. Because I was just biting my teeth going, oh, no, no.
Oh, he was so funny. Yeah. His son's on the show SWAT right now, Louis Jr. And
oh, really?
He's in it.
So his son's an actor?
Yeah, he's a really good actor.
Got it.
Who has fought his whole life to, you know, be seen and heard as a...
As not Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But he trains Sam. He's always working out with him. I'm like, you coming over? Yeah, I'm done with Ferrigno's. Pumping iron, and I'll be over in like 20 minutes.
You get trained by a fucking Ferrigno?
It's true. You got, you know,
fucking Ferrigno.
Yeah, I love those guys. They're fantastic.
So just for anybody who's young and might not know who Lou Ferrigno is, Lou Ferrigno played Hulk in the original TV series.
He murdered
Incredible Hulk.
There was an original TV series?
He was it. He was great.
And that show fucking rules.
It rules.
That's awesome.
It rules.
David Banner.
Yeah, dude. That show, I watched every fucking episode.
I mean, too. It rules. Loved it. Yeah. It rules.
Remember the greatest American superhero, the guy with the big blonde hair?
Believe it or not, I'm walking on air.
Do we remember?
Wow. The whole thing, man.
Flying away on a weird prayer.
Who could it be? Doodle-dee-doodle-dee-doo. Believe it or not.
I'm just going to go. You guys keep doing it.
So we played this game the other night at the Writers Guild. We met these people, and now I want to play it everywhere we go. Who's the first celebrity you ever met?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good question.
Fuck. Who is the first celebrity I ever met? Honestly,
must have been when you were young on set.
I think it was fucking Sugar Ray Leonard.
No,
yeah. Holy shit, dude! I was at the Boston Garden for the Leonard Hagler fight. It was on closed circuit TV because they had that fight somewhere else. I think in New York or something.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
I was at Boston Garden on that fight, and there was like a semi riot. They were ripping out.
Dude,
everybody was pissed off. Everybody thought Hagler had it.
And who was yours?
Yeah, who was yours?
Mine. All right, hold on. Let me think here. Troy Duffy is confused.
Troy Duffy is confused.
It was when I'm
spinoff
here.
Spinoff.
I think there was a celebrity I saw and then one I actually met. The one I met was Alan Thicke.
Nice.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah.
He was great.
Yeah.
When I saw, might have been like more of a rock star or something. Might have been Slash.
That's also sick. Yeah.
My first was Telly Savalas.
Whoa.
Savalas.
Telly Savalas.
Yeah. In all of his saliva.
Telly Savalas.
Must have left an impression.
I didn't even say his fucking name. I was like eight. I was like, is that Kojak? I remember that part, you know.
Fucking awesome.
So what's that movie look like? That's the game we play. It's Alan Thicke. It's Sugar Ray Leonard.
Sugar Ray Leonard. Telly Savalas.
It's like a ragtag military operation.
I like that. That's it.
Savalas is the general.
For sure.
Crazy kids better pull this off.
Listen here. Listen, see?
Sugar Ray's like, I'm inches from retirement, and you pair me up with this young, crazy rookie.
Fucking
with a mind of his own who doesn't go by the rules, goddammit.
But with a heart of gold.
But with a heart of gold.
Yeah, dude.
Did you ever do that? Do you ever go into old movie guy talk like we do? We're always like, fucking, give me the skinny, see?
Skinny.
It's a good voice to go into.
It is. I always imitate studio guys that way when I meet them, you know?
Give it to me straight,
see?
Yeah.
Speaking of old movies, do you guys ever go on? Because now with the streaming shit, every movie ever made is there to just be clicked on.
Yeah.
And Amazon Prime specifically has like a bunch of old catalogs full of just like random filmmakers shit. And it's all streaming. It's all just up there. Like, I don't even know if anybody even has their rights.
Yeah.
And so there's like these old school.
Like black and white shit?
There's that, but there's also like every cheap, shitty, straight to video, late 70s, early 80s. Fucking like action movie
that we never even heard of.
Sounds
dude.
Amazing,
dude. I just saw this one the other day called Aerobicide, and it's this it's aerobics place. It's actually fucking amazing.
Aerobicide.
This guy David Pryor.
Dude, I would have been out on the title. No thanks.
Yeah. Aerobicide, and it's just this aerobics club. It's 1987, like that's the peak of the aerobics movement.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And this killer is on the loose, killing all these women, and it's like nude women all over the place, blood everywhere.
It was a different time.
Different time. I mean, it's the most fucking, like, actually, like, there's some really legitimate, like, sexist shit in there. You know, and you're just like, this couldn't even be sniffed now.
Yeah, you ever seen Sallow?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Holy.
Talk about can't be made.
Actually, this is a pun. Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. That's not even.
We watched that the other day.
Yeah.
You think that, like, you know, you think you're all controversial and shit. No thanks, man. Yeah. Holy shit.
Give controversy a fucking new name. Yep. Yeah. Can't do that anymore.
No.
No,
shouldn't have done it in the first place.
There's an interesting case to be made for that.
Yeah. That one's a little wild.
Yeah.
So many people are in it.
Oh, for sure. I mean, what is it? Sodom? What is it? There's like a subtitle for it. It's 30 Days of Sodom or
30 Years of Sodom. 30,
yeah.
Ouch.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah.
Next subject.
Yeah, that gave us a little fucking. We're all remembering Sala right
now. A good time to take a piss? Can we?
There is no piss.
There is no piss?
All right, we can take a piss, dude. Yeah.
We're going to take a break. You guys want to keep talking?
Break, yeah. How long are we in? Oh, let's just fucking finish.
Why don't we just end it? High five.
It's finished, dude.
Yeah. We're done.
Wrap up.
It's an hour long podcast.
Can you hold it for like 5 more minutes?
Hold it for 5 minutes, bro.
Sure.
Oh, that's great. That's fucking great. Excellent. Okay. Excellent. So now we're going to wrap up Trey has to pee too, so it's good timing. What's up now? What's up? What do you guys want to tell me before we go?
You're an awesome dude, and you're not confused.
Thank you. Now I'm not confused.
Matt is not confused. Yeah. This was a great podcast for me.
This was fun.
And I'm a veteran of two podcasts.
He knows what he's talking about.
Amanda Knox's and Matt Jalea's, I found them both exhilarating.
Amanda Knox's? There we go.
She's freaking great.
Fuck yeah.
Well, thanks for being so kind to us.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for coming on, dude. Positive. This was fucking lots of fun.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
No problem, man. Anytime. This is kind of funny. You should do like a movie night thing. Like, I remember there was this one of yours that you did solo, and you were just bitching about movies and how they are today, and you mentioned something.
Yeah.
I am now going to ask you some questions.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Oh!
Matt fucking Jalea.
Yeah.
You didn't see First Blood?
I didn't see First Blood.
Oh, my God.
What's the fucking matter with you?
Fuck,
Jesus.
Dude.
A lot.
We should stop this podcast right now. Go home and pop some corn and you're watch like, one of the best goddamn movies.
You're definitely the wrong guy to be talking about how I haven't seen Rambo shit. I could have guessed that. Yeah.
But seriously, man, I saw that movie. I was like running in the woods with a stupid headband trying to kill a squirrel and eat it raw. It was ridiculous. It was one of those movies that had an effect on you. That's another maybe a question for the both of you. What are the movies that have affected you the most? Like, you know, like the next day. Like, maybe you know how people walk out of Rocky. And,
right.
Yeah. Well, I always thought, first of all, I'm just going to comment on First Blood. I always thought the studio guys were like, shit, we got a franchise on our hands because the first one's called First Blood and the second one's called Rambo 2.
Yeah, right.
So it's there's no Rambo 1, but we'll make that leap with you because we're stoked.
True, yeah. That's right. The title was just First Blood, right?
Yeah. It's we've got a franchise, boys.
Yeah.
How do we package
this up? Yeah. Hey, we got Stallone wrapped into a
franchise.
Didn't
take much, yeah.
Everybody start making money.
Give him the fucking headband again and just put it on camera, yeah.
I'm super influenced by 80s crap, you know, Spielberg crap, like Back to the Future. Indiana Jones, that's where I live.
That too. What about you?
The thing that might have left
What is a movie like that sort of changed your thing or made you even want to make a movie?
Honestly, I mean, not to be an art cocksucker, but John Cassavetes' Husbands, because I had never seen anything like I was like, that can be a movie too. It just kind of cracked my head open about like the possibility of what a movie could be.
Because
I was really young. I saw that way too young. But I was like, what the fuck is
John
this?
John Cassavetes' Husbands, you're such an artist.
I'm such a cocksucker.
You're such a tender artist. I'm in sensitive feelings.
But also later than that, I think Swingers.
Look at us.
Swingers.
Yeah. Awesome. Pulp Fiction was awesome.
Huge.
Reservoir Dogs, I freaking love.
Huge.
I think when I was really young, though, you guys remember the first Highlander with Chris Hemsworth?
Yeah. I mean, yes. Yeah.
I loved that movie.
That's a great movie, actually.
I can't even explain how much I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of was one of those things. I don't even think VHS was available back then. What was that? What was the ones before with a silver disc?
Laser disc.
Laser disc. I think somebody had it on.
The big.
Yeah.
Like the size of the sun.
Yeah. I just sit there.
Yeah. Laserdisc was the shit. When you had a buddy who had a Laserdisc player, you were at his house.
You were in.
I knew this.
Yeah.
The first big-time producer I ever met, the guy's name was Jim Jacks, God rest his soul. He was just a wonderful guy. He had a silver Laserdisc collection of like 10,000. Ran down his whole hallway.
What?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. He'd pull them out like records. He had everything. He even had movies from today. He was able to do it because he's made, you know,
today?
Yeah.
From the future?
Freaking laser disc.
That's a movie I want to show.
Some guy out there that fucking does that.
Fucking A. Laserdisc.
That's great. Well, hey, thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful. Cool.